I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
It's my pleasure to moderate this afternoon's debate at the invitation of the Utah Debate Commission. This event, held live on June 1st, is part of the Utah Debate Commission's work to educate voters and encourage the civil exchange of ideas. Freedom of expression is one of the most important founding principles that we have in our country. The exchange of ideas, not violence, allows the country to move forward and solve the issues facing all of us. If you're watching or listening live, we encourage your reactions and your questions on social media using these hashtags, UT Debates and Listen, Learn, Vote. We're on the campus of the University of Utah, broadcasting live from the Dolores Dory Eccles Broadcasting Center, where we are holding the debate between Democratic primary candidates in Utah's race for the 1st Congressional District. For the safety of all involved in the debate process this afternoon, we are adhering to social distancing guidelines. There is no studio audience this afternoon. Today, we will hear from the candidates, Jamie Cheek and Darren Perry. The Utah Debate Commission has established a format that allows each candidate 60 seconds for a reply to the first question. Today's questions will be proposed by myself, university students, member of the news media, and the viewing audience, participating as well on social media. Following the first introductory question, the format for the debate will allow for either a 1 or 2 minute response from each candidate. I will announce response times prior to asking the question. Following the questions, the candidates will then have an opportunity for a 30-second rebuttal. If needed, I may also pose a follow-up question. The candidates will have 30 seconds to answer that question. Now, a random draw determined that Mr. Darren Perry will get the initial response to the first question. We'll alternate who answers first on the remaining questions this afternoon. Let's get right into the questions now. Welcome this afternoon, everybody. It is very important that we know something personal about the candidates. There will not be a rebuttal for this question. The first question goes to Mr. Perry. What uniquely qualifies you to represent the 1st Congressional District?
Thank you. I'm at least a 50-generation Utahn. I've lived my entire life in the 1st District. Over the past several years, I've been blessed to serve as the chairman of the Shoshone Nation. Those of you who know me know my heritage is important to me. It's given me a seat at the table. It's given me the chance to meet with local and county governments, the governor, the legislature, and our federal delegation. I have worked with federal agencies over the last few years to bring funding opportunities for my people. But more than that, I'm a bridge builder. I am uniquely qualified to bring people together to accomplish something amazing. If this pandemic hasn't taught us anything, it has taught us that representation will matter. Proven leadership will matter. Having a seat at the table will matter.
Thank you. Ms. Cheek.
Hello, I'm Jamie Cheek, and I'm running to be the first Democratic congresswoman to represent Utah's 1st Congressional District. I was born and raised in a rural small town in Wyoming, and like many of the families here in District 1, my family struggled to make ends meet when I was growing up. We relied on government services like food stamps and Medicaid, and Pell Grants and student loans are how I was able to become a first-generation college student to graduate from the University of Wyoming. Later, I was able to earn my master's degree in rehabilitation counseling from the Utah State University. For the past 7 years, I worked for the Utah State Office of Rehabilitation, where I've served as the district director in Logan, Brigham City, and now Ogden. I work every day with the people in our community who are falling behind and who are falling through the cracks because of decisions that have been made in Washington. And those decisions, both the good and the bad, are why I'm running to be your congresswoman. I'm running for Congress to create common sense policy solutions that will make life better for all Utahns.
Our next question will go to Ms. Cheek. We'll begin with Ms. Cheek. She has 2 minutes to answer this question. Let me ask you, over the past several nights, we've seen violent protests over the killing of an African-American in Minneapolis. The death has energized street protesters that gave rise to Black Lives Matter several years ago. What should Congress do to ensure equity policing for all Americans?
Well, first and foremost, I think that we need to take the bigger message from these protests, which is that there are over-policing that's happening against black and brown bodies happening now. Black Lives Matter is more than just a hashtag. It's a way of life that we need to recognize and make sure that these individuals have a seat at the table and are able to have these conversations. I think as Congress, we need to have national policing reforms. We've done things like add body cams, but we're not seeing it being implemented nationally, and we're not seeing it used in a way that benefits and creates better policing solutions. So that's definitely something we need to do. I also think that there needs to be comprehensive training about the way that we train police officers. Far too often, our officers are stuck in a position where they are forced to escalate a situation rather than de-escalate it. I think these protests have shown us that when police officers take the message that's being told to them and they look for a solution rather than an endpoint of an arrest or putting someone into a police car, that we actually have much better interactions that happen in the long term. So we definitely need to be changing the way that we train our police officers. And then finally, I think that we just need to make sure that we're paying attention to this conversation and that we give a voice and a platform to the individuals who want to speak about this. I was lucky enough to be able to go to the protest that was held here in Ogden that was organized by Black Lives Matter, and it was beautiful. We had over 2,000 people attend, and the Ogden Police Department, who just suffered their own loss, was willing to be there and make sure that the people had the right to peacefully protest. That's how it should work, that people should be able to come together and have these conversations and show what matters to our communities. And we should be able to take that message to Washington. So being a part of that protest gives me the information that I need from my position of privilege to have these conversations and know who to speak to when we look at finding solutions for how we solve the problems that we're seeing today.
Mr. Perry.
Thank you. It's been sad to watch the things that have occurred on TV. Martin Luther King Jr. said, riots are the voice of the unheard. But let's be clear, protesters will protest. Those who want to engage in riots and destructive behavior will riot. The problem is clear. People of color have not had a seat at the table. As a Native American leader, I understand that, and it's disheartening. We need to have more community engagement. We need to invite everyone to the table and have a voice. Last night on the news, it was wonderful to see the sheriff of Salt Lake County talk about what they're doing in their community to engage people of color. And then she said this. She said, "We are so excited that for the first time we have one of our refugees graduate from the police academy, and how important that will be that refugee can serve in the community that they live, that people in those communities can see people that look like them." The other thing we need to make sure we engage them with community advisory boards. I serve on the Huntsman Cancer Community Institute Board. Our first meeting, I got to sit by the Reverend France Davis, and what a wonderful thing it was for me to be able to learn from that. And then more importantly, we need to concentrate on police training, making sure they have ways to de-escalate certain situations and tough situations that they are put in.
Our next question goes to Mr. Perry to begin with, and it comes from Ben Winslow, a reporter from Fox 13. Ben?
Hi, Ben.
Hello. It is no secret that the district you're running to represent is deeply Republican territory. So my question for you is, what would you do to reach out to some of these Republican-leaning voters to maybe persuade them to consider you as a candidate to represent them?
Thank you. I hate labels. I'm a conservative or I'm a liberal progressive. I think there's a vast majority of us that live in this middle space. And that's where I've lived my whole life, is in the middle space. And so for me, it's an easy transition. As a Native American leader, I've had to meet with groups that haven't had our best interest at heart. And I've navigated those waters, being able to negotiate settlements, negotiate peaceful means of how we can get along. And so you're right, 40 years is a long time, and I've been able to build bridges through everything I've done, through everything I've lived through, to gain that support, because we are going to need a lot of the middle to Republican votes to win.
Jamie Cheek.
Yeah, so I think it's really important that we talk about the messaging and the values that matter, both to Republicans and Democrats. My platform includes issues that are affecting all Utahns, and I'm the one who has solutions for how we can try to fix them. In our district alone, we have over 50,000 uninsured Utahns, and so talking about health care isn't just a Democratic issue. It's an all Utahns issue. When we talk about things like climate change and air pollution, we have two of the top 20 most polluted cities in America. And that's an issue that matters whether you're red or you're blue. And so it's talking to the individuals who care about the things that matter to Utahns and showing them that I'm willing to listen and I'm willing to learn and I want to know what matters most to them and how it is that as their representative, I can take those concerns to Washington and create real solutions. I think sometimes we get bogged down in bipartisanship and don't get to have to real solutions to make a difference. And so showing Republicans that I can be that voice is critical.
I have a follow-up question on our first two questions I'd like to ask you and give each of you 30 seconds. You both have talked about bringing people together and America listening. As a result of the events of the last week that we've had in this country, what is it going to take to get America to listen to this? And we begin with Mr. Perry. Mr. Perry.
It's going to take someone that can bring, that understands those marginalized communities. That's who I represent, those marginalized communities. People that have never had a voice. And so what's important is being able to engage that group, bring them to the table, and have their voices heard. My grandmother told me once, Darren, no one has ever wanted to hear our story. One day you will have to make them listen. And that's what we need to do.
Jamie Cheek.
I think being involved within our communities is the first starting point. We don't know what needs to be done or what actions should be taken until we start listening to the communities that matter the most. That's why I've been so involved within my community, especially within Weber, but also, you know, Cash and Box Elder. And I think knowing what they want us to talk about and being able to have those conversations and using my position to be able to have those conversations, both as a state of Utah employee, but also as a white woman. And I think it's important that we have those conversations.
Before the events of this past week unfolded, America's attention, of course, dealt with the COVID-19 pandemic. As the country continues to try and balance the public's health and the return to a stronger economy, Washington is wrestling with a question about the need for the possibility of a fourth recovery plan. Do you see the need for more economic incentives from Washington? And we begin this question with Jamie Cheek.
So I think that what has happened with the COVID pandemic is it has exposed so many of the cracks that we see within American society and how much we haven't been doing for the Americans who need the support the most. We're the only country where millions of people lost their jobs, but millions of people also lost their health insurance. Over 20 million jobs were shed when we closed down the United States. Many of those jobs will never be coming back. And so we need to be taking a real look at how we help the individuals who lost those jobs and lost that health care. I know that we're reopening the country, and there is definitely some hesitation there. And I want to make sure that every state is opening their state back up in a safe manner, and that we're keeping Americans safe. But I think that we do need to look at serious solutions about how we move forward, especially in the event that there might be a double curve that happens here in the fall. I think it's unfortunate that when we look at this fourth package, that it's getting bogged down in party politics that we talk about. It was great to be able to see Congress come together and find a solution through those first three stimulus packages. But now there's nothing being done. I think that we definitely need to be implementing another package. I think when we look at other countries who have continued to provide sustained support for their citizens who've lost their job and can't pay their rent or can't put food on the table, we see them providing that necessary supports. Here in America, we're relying on food drives and, employment opportunities that maybe aren't in their field just to be able to stay within their homes. And that's unfortunate. We need to do better. And so absolutely, we need to do something, and we need it to be a move forward for the Americans who are lost in the cracks. And I think that the best way to do that is through another piece of legislation.
Darren Perry, you have 2 minutes to respond to that question as well.
Look, the government's done a wonderful job of taking care of large business. There's no question. In 2008, they did, and they did it again there. And they're the last people that need that bailout. We have 30 million Americans that have lost their jobs. Not only have they lost their jobs, they've lost access to affordable health care. We need to make sure that the most vulnerable people in our society have the ability to not have to worry about where they're going to get their food, whether if their child gets sick, if they're going to be able to take them to the hospital, and what that will mean financially for them for the rest of their lives. We need to make sure in the stimulus package we extend unemployment benefits with no strings attached. We need to increase food aid so our young children aren't going hungry. We live in the richest country in the world, and it's appalling to me that we have children and others who don't have enough food on their tables. It's important that we extend housing assistance programs, especially in this pandemic. We don't want anyone going homeless because they can't pay rent or any other thing. And more than that, we need to provide stimulus checks for the working class and middle class people. Look, $1,700 over the last 3 months is not going to cut it. And so if we're going to help those in need, let's help the most vulnerable of our society, those who are really suffering from the pandemic. And that would be my goal.
All right. The next question will go to Mr. Perry, and we'll stay on the issue of the pandemic, and you'll have a minute to respond to this. Staying on the issue, key members of both parties, both the Democrats and Republicans, have various plans to move millions of Americans off unemployment and get them back to work by paying employees to get back to work. The plans, there are several ideas, the additional $600 of unemployment to continue that, the idea of paying a $450 bonus to bring people back to work. There's also been talk of giving everybody a 7.5% pay raise through a cut in the payroll deduction tax. Do you support any of the ideas, and what would you like to see done?
Absolutely. It sounds like I would support all of those. Look, people want to go to work. I just believe that people want to work today. And so anything that we can do to provide an incentive for people to get back on their job, why does it take a pandemic for us to really care about people and care about families? It's crazy to me that it takes something like this to do that. And I would support all of those measures.
Ms. Cheek?
So I think it's important that we continue to support the working class and that we continue to provide unemployment benefits. Those who can go back to work are going back to work. So I absolutely think that we need to continue to support those individuals. Of the options that you gave, I would definitely not support a payroll tax cut. I think that while it would create a short-term benefit for employees, it would erode our ability to continue to pay into Social Security, which would cause bigger problems later. So it's important that we provide a solution for now that doesn't cause more problems later. I think that as we talked about, there's 20 million jobs that were shed, and some of them aren't coming back. Forcing people to go to work just for the sake of going to work is not good for the economy. It's not good for Americans. And so we need to support the individuals who can go back to work and then also support the ones who need assistance finding a different job or finding a new economy for them and their family.
Mr. Perry, you have a
rebuttal. The only thing I would add to that is I think there's other ways we can get tax revenue. I don't think it has to come out of that. There's other things that we can cut. Just depends where our priorities are. And people need to be our priority.
And on the surface, what would you cut?
Subsidies to large corporations. Subsidies to gas and oil. Those are things we need to be getting away from today, frankly. And so there's a lot of things that we can do.
All right. Our next question comes from Brody Bailey. Brody is a student at Weber State University.
Hi, my name is Brody Bailey, and I'm a student at Weber State University. My question is, aside from the COVID pandemic, what do you see as the most pressing issue for District 1 in the next 5 years?
That goes to Ms. Cheek. Mr. Perry, I'm sorry, Mr. Perry.
I want to say the protection of our public lands and climate change. I lump them together because we're talking about the environment. So environmental issues. I hate getting up in the morning and looking out on a where we've had 10 days of high pressure and not being able to see the mountain range, which is a mile from my home. That's a problem. And it's going to continue to be a problem unless we get a handle on it. And so I look at the environment. As a Native American leader, I look at how we've treated Mother Earth. We need to start living sustainable lives. There's incremental things that we can do to get there. We don't have to eat the elephant in all one bite. But we've got to start making the changes today if we want to have a cleaner environment tomorrow.
Jamie Cheek.
I think the biggest issue facing CD1 is education. We have over 60 Title I schools, and they're struggling to be able to afford keeping students engaged and being able to pay our teachers correctly. We are the 51st state in what we pay per pupil for our schools, and that needs to change. But in addition to that, we also need to be looking at education above the K-12 area. Here in CD1, we have 2 4-year institutions, both Weber State and Utah State. And the best way to pull ourselves out of an economic depression is by providing individuals educational opportunities in a way that makes it so that it's affordable and accessible for them. So doing things like, free tuition for a trade school or reduced tuition for a 4-year institution is the way that we're going to be able to move forward, especially for the rural communities that are here in CD1. Education is the best path forward. And as your congresswoman, that is something that's going to be at the forefront of issues that I talk about in Washington. And we need more federal government intervention to be able to make that better.
All right, let's move on to the next topic, the issue of foreign policy, which is, of course, tied into the pandemic right now. And we'll begin this with Jamie Cheek. Who do you think is the biggest foreign threat to the U.S. right now and why? 2 minutes.
Yeah, so I think we have a couple foreign threats that we definitely need to look into. But most importantly, I think when we look at our elections and our cybersecurity and our digital borders, China seems to be one of our bigger threats that we have. I think that we need to be making sure that we're investing in our digital protection, but that we need to be balancing that both with our needs for privacy. I think when we talk about digital security, especially in reference to China, this is a bipartisan issue where we can all work together because we all agree that our digital borders are insecure and that China is actively working to reduce our ability to keep our elections safe, but also a lot of our data safe. And so that's something we need to make a priority as well. I think we also see most recently, given the pandemic, that China has used this as an opportunity to remove one of the ways that Hong Kong has been able to keep its own sovereignty. They have used the justification of the legal system to keep those two sovereign nations separate. But now, because of the pandemic, they are able to kind of take some of that passage away. And we see how our administration is responding to that. And I think that that is bad policy as well. And so I think focusing on ways that we can engage China in a positive way. And it doesn't have to just be trade. It doesn't just have to be, monetarily based. We need to engage at a level that makes sense for both countries to alleviate the threat, but then also continue to build security in our digital borders.
Mr. Perry, you have 2 minutes on the issue of foreign threats.
I agree with Jamie. I think China is the number one actor I don't think they have our best interest at heart. Cybersecurity is a must. We must invest in making sure that our structures are sound and can't be tampered with. Look, we rely on China way too much for many of the things that we take take advantage of every day. My wife's a nurse here in Utah, and she said there may be a shortage of antibiotics because they're all made in China. So really, we're relying upon a country that really doesn't like us for basic needs. The deficit, the trade deficit we have with China is unacceptable. And so China owns a lot of debt that the Americans have. So it's important that we get our own fiscal house in order. It's important that we don't have a relationship with a country that doesn't like us, that we rely on for basic things to get by. And so having a better and stronger relationship with China is a must.
It's a very large issue, and I still want to stay on the topic of China right now. We'll begin this question and give you each 1 minute to respond to it. Speaking of China, we have a lot of businesses here in Utah that work with China. What should U.S. policy be in providing a balanced strategic and business model in dealing with China? What does it look like, Mr. Perry?
I just think it has to be fair. It has to be fair and an open process. I don't think one country needs to take advantage of the other country, which is what has happened over the last 20 years. And so we bring people to the table in a spirit of cooperation, in a spirit that we can work together for the common good. And we try to do that. And so sitting down, knee to knee, face to face, negotiating a settlement that is good for both, that's a win-win, is policies that, as a government, we need to pursue. And they're policies that I would absolutely support. I'm not adversarial at all, and I think there's a better way to accomplish things. And so sitting down in the spirit of friendship would be my goal.
Jamie Cheek, let's talk about balance between China and our strategic and business plans.
I think it's important that we keep what the business needs are here in Utah as the forefront of when we start in negotiating these conversations. I think we need to make sure that our workers here in Utah are given, you know, a reasonable wage and are protected, and that's where we start that conversation when we start looking at how we do business with China. I also think that we need to take a real hard look at intellectual property rights. We need to make sure that those are being protected here at home so that we can continue to have the best version of products, and that our businesses here in Utah continue to be supported and have the access to those items. That's really the most important. And I think that when we have these conversations, while it's nice for us to be able to get along, we need to make sure that what solution we come to is best for what's here in Utah. And that's our priority when we engage in these conversations.
This is a issue that I think we could spend the entire debate on, but you'll only have 2 minutes. We'll begin with you, Jamie Cheek. It is a question from Olive Erickson. She is a student at Weber State University.
Hi, my name is Olivia Erickson, and I'm a student at Weber State University. One of my concerns is the high cost of healthcare and prescription drugs. How are you going to make healthcare affordable for all?
Great.
Jamie Cheek.
Healthcare is one of the biggest cornerstones of my platform. I think healthcare needs to become more accessible and more affordable. Too many Utahns, even here in CD1, struggle to even get health insurance, let alone continue to pay their monthly premiums on top of their deductibles when they do have a need for healthcare. Currently, we have a sick care system where people can only get treated once the condition has come to the worst of it. So we need to start creating preventative healthcare. The way that we do that is we look at what's broken with the system and how do we improve it. One of the things that I've talked a lot about is Medicare for All. This is a program that allows for those who need health care, which is everyone, to have access to it and not have it, be cost prohibitive for them to receive the treatment that they need or have access to the prescriptions that they need for life-saving medications. We need to be putting this at the forefront of every conversation that we have because it is the root of some of the other problems we talk about. If we want a good economy, we have to have good workers who have health care and have the ability to receive the treatment that they need. Now, I understand that Medicare for All isn't going to happen with a magic wand. So we need to be able to have these conversations in Washington about how we improve the system. But we do that by making progressive steps forward. Things like a public option is something that we can do that allows those who want health care through the federal government to have it. And those who don't can go through private insurance companies. But those private insurance companies are now forced to compete on the market with the federal government, provide the same amount of services in a competitive price range that brings the cost overall down for all Americans as well as the federal government. And that's a progressive step that we can take when we go to Washington and have this conversation because we're going to have it. Our system is broken and something needs to change. And when we start at Medicare for All, the compromise can be a public option. But if we're already compromising before we get to Washington, no real progress is going to be made. And that's the promise I make.
Ms. Perry, you have 2 minutes to talk about health care.
Health care is a right that all Americans should have. I agree there. I am not for a single-payer system. I believe, and what I will do and work hard to accomplish in Washington, D.C., I will defend and strengthen the Affordable Care Act. I will work with Republicans to do all we can to lower prescription drug costs. There's things we can do to make that happen, but we need to work across the aisle to do that. I believe it's important that we expand that safety net, that every state has the ability to expand Medicaid in their states. Bigger than what we have. I have a daughter who's a single parent. She can't afford to live on her own. And she has a good job because she can't afford her health care premiums and rent and insurance. And so we need to be able to make sure that those in our society that are lower income people have the ability to tap into the Medicaid. As we do this, and the big forgotten thing in the room is we need to make sure that people have access to mental health care. There's a stigma involved with mental health, and people don't look at it the same way as going to a doctor for a broken arm, but we need to start looking at it that way. We need to make sure our health care covers mental health. I served an LDS mission in England where they have a one-payer system, and I don't want to go back to that system. We need to figure out a better way. And for right now, I think it's the Affordable Care Act with other things.
With this next question, each of you will have 1 minute to respond, and Mr. Perry, you'll be up first. And the question being posed by Ben Winslow from Fox 13. Ben?
Well, as you know, for my job, I ask a lot of politicians and a lot of candidates questions and get answers, but I kind of want to turn the tables now. I would like each of you to ask each other a question and get an answer.
Mr. Perry.
I'm going to ask first.
You can ask Jamie a question, yes.
Jamie, in the last 10 elections in the first district, the Democratic candidate hasn't gotten more than 33% of the vote. Running a progressive campaign, how do you plan to change that?
That's an eerily similar question to what you had for my town hall in Brigham City. And I'll give you the same answer that I gave you then. Progressive candidates have the ability to excite the Democratic base while also talking about the things that matter the most to all Utahns. I know that we have a heavily Republican district. I'm not, you know, surprised. But we do have the issues on our side. We do have the things that people care about, healthcare, education, and the climate change. all here for us. I'm an exciting candidate. It's great to get to talk to me. I tell awesome jokes. People want to be around me, and they want to hear the things that I have to say, and I want to hear what they have to say. I'm a great listener, and I take those things that I learn from the communities that I'm in, and I use them when I have these important conversations, especially being that I get to see some of our most vulnerable populations, sometimes on the worst day of their lives, and being able to provide the supports necessary for them to be successful.
Thank you. All right, our next question comes to us from Andrew Waltrip. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, you get to ask him a question. My fault,
it's
Jamie.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
I think that was a great question, Jerry. I think I would ask, we've been running moderate candidates for 10 cycles now and, again, have continued to have 35%. So what about your candidacy is different from the last 10 cycles?
Thank you. And that was a kind question. So the difference is I've grown up here my whole life. I grew up in Davis County, lived most of my married life in Weber County. I live in the Cache Valley now. People know me. They know my family. They know what kind of person I am. They know that party will never get in the way of policy. I will always do the right thing. I will always put the people of Utah first over party. I will make sure every decision I make is made with integrity and is made with love and is made in the best interest of those who live in my district. And I think people that live in my district know that. They know me because they've seen my leadership over time. And that proven leadership is what is going to make the difference this time.
Well, we are just past the midpoint of our debate this afternoon. I welcome you once again to this live debate between the Democratic primary candidates for Utah's 1st Congressional District. We are broadcasting live from the University of Utah. This afternoon's debate is between Jamie Cheek and Darren Perry, vying for the seat currently held by Congressman Rob Bishop. This is one of several debates sponsored by the Utah Debate Commission, taking place prior to the primary election, which will be held on June 30th, to provide voters with an opportunity to hear candidates running for the federal office. Let's now go back to our exchange. Our next question comes to us from Andrew Wallop at Weber State University, a question about climate change, and I believe this goes to Mr. Perry.
My name is Andrew Waltrip. I'm a student at Weber State University, and my question is, what measures would you support to reduce the effects of climate change on public health?
We need to start out with the ability to make incremental changes. Look, the climate crisis isn't a science problem. It's a problem of us not wanting to change. And so we need to have goals that are measurable. We need to make sure that we do things individually, drive less, ride a bike more, plant a tree, dry our clothes on the line. There's all these little things that we can do to start moving the needle in the direction we want it done. And then as a government, we need to make sure that we're holding our auto industry accountable, that we invest more in electrical cars, and we do things like that that really allow us to get away from the gas and fossil fuel industries.
Jamie Cheek.
I think that's a good start for how we deal with climate change, but there's more that needs to be done. This is a big business problem, and it's affecting everyone on the planet. So we need to have aggressive action when we talk about climate change. A policy proposal that I am willing to defend is the Green New Deal. Not only does it create progressive changes in the way that we have carbon emissions, but it also has a jobs guarantee. So not only do we get to make an aggressive change on climate change, but we also get Americans back to work, which is the most important part. So we need to work as a country, but also internationally. We need to agree to terms like the Paris Accords and start looking at this as a global problem. We can take small incremental changes at the individual level, but that's not where most pollution is coming from. It's coming from big business that isn't being regulated, that isn't being forced to watch its emissions or how it is that they're affecting the communities around them. So that's what we need, is legislation to hold those big businesses accountable.
I want to follow up on that, if I could, and I'll pose this question to Mr. Perry for 30 seconds. Jamie Cheek just mentioned the Green New Deal. Do you support it?
In concept, I absolutely support it, and I think it's something we will get to eventually. But as I talked about these incremental changes, even the Democrats, the hardcore Democrats in Washington, D.C., realize that we can't implement the Green New Deal tomorrow. And so what can we do now to start moving that needle that way? And I absolutely believe in the Green New Deal, but I think it's going to take us a little bit of time to get there.
All right, let's move on to our next question now. Utah and Utahns in smaller cities and towns, and this comes to us from Lad Egan at KSL Television Channel 5. Utahns in smaller cities and towns, as you have heard in your campaigning, complain that they don't have the same economic opportunities as those along the Wasatch Front. What would you do to help bridge the divide between urban and rural Utah? Jamie Cheek, I'm sorry.
I think the most important thing that we can do, and one of probably the best things that's come out of this pandemic, is we can make telework a real opportunity. Already, the state of Utah has started dabbling in telework by moving some of these jobs off of the Wasatch Front, and it has been met with rousing success. I have a job where I was told I could never work from home, and yet we were able to successfully do that for over 2 months. And our clients appreciated the opportunity to not have to come into our offices and can meet us where they were at over the phone. And I think that when we move these jobs into the rural communities, it's not just moving off of the Wasatch Front. It's literally moving those dollars into those rural communities. So instead of going to a fast food restaurant on their way home, they can go to a small business and have dinner there or get their services from a local handyman and not have to rely so much on all of the all that's in the Wasatch Front. And they can take those dollars and not have to leave to invest in those communities.
Mr. Perry.
I love the one thing that Jamie did mention, but there's two other things that we can really do. We need to make sure that we invest in high-speed internet. What that will allow us to do, as Jamie said, is bring jobs to rural Utah. But not only that, it provides health care to rural Utah. These communities don't have a hospital. They very seldom have a clinic that they can go to. So telehealth. If they have high-speed internet, they can see their doctor. My last two doctor visits were done online on my iPad. Not only that, we can educate those in rural Utah with high-speed internet. They can take a college course. They can actually graduate with a 4-year degree from having wideband internet. And we need to make sure, and it will be a priority of mine, that we invest in those rural communities here in Utah.
Well, let's talk about those rural communities, because that's an issue that you hear from a lot of people. The question is, do we need the technology that both of you have brought up, actually need to move those industries into rural Utah, or is there a better way to do this? Jamie, 30 seconds.
I definitely think that some of those industries already exist, but I think that some of the jobs that we're seeing on the Wasatch Front don't exist in the rural communities, and that's okay. We have other labor markets that exist in the rural communities, things like manufacturing and production, which are things that we can't do online. But what we need to do is expand opportunities for different kinds of work for our rural communities, and that starts at teleworking, and then we can build up and have those opportunities be then housed in those rural communities that could then telecommute in to the Wasatch Front.
Mr. Perry, 30 seconds.
Rural Utah is farming communities. They're dairy communities. People that live in those communities want to stay there. But the younger generations, maybe not so much. They might not want to be a farmer like their fathers and grandfathers were. So having that reliable internet connection will allow them to live in a community they love, but have the ability to work outside that community and have all the amenities that come with being connected to the outside world.
All right, our next question, it'll be a two-minute question for Mr. Perry, and this is an issue that seems to have gone onto the back burner with everything else that's going on in this country, and it's the issue of immigration. Immigration is almost, to many people, an unsolvable problem with many competing forces. If elected, where would you begin to start working on the critical issue to fix the mess that I think everyone agrees that we're in now? Do you look at DACA? Do you look at the wall? Do you look at retaining or deporting? Mr. Perry.
I think we look at the first two for sure that you mentioned. Look, if we impose the immigration restrictions we have today in the year 1492, my people would still own this land. But we don't. We live in a country that we used to call the great melting pot of the world. And so that's important. It's important that we keep those roots. It's important that we have people that want to leave a country that's been oppressed to come to a better life. I absolutely believe in immigration. I believe in its reform, and I will work tirelessly. It's one of my three most important areas of things that we need to work on. The first thing we need to do, I think we need to secure the borders. There is absolutely no way to have a comprehensive immigration policy without being able to secure the borders. Second, I want to give the DACA recipients citizenship. It's not their fault. They've been here. They've gone to school here. They pay their taxes here. 73% of Utahns agree, and they want this. They want citizenship for DACA. I also propose a blue card legislation program that would protect those workers that are here in the agricultural business, that are doing agriculture and dairy farm workers. I want to give them a path to citizenship forward. So maybe it might look like having work here for 5 years. If you paid your taxes and kept your nose clean, that you have the ability and a path forward to citizenship. We need to live up to the responsibility of what this country used to be, and that we accept people that want to come here, that want to live good lives. And that's what I'm committed to do.
Ms. Cheek, I think everyone agrees immigration, the issue, is a mess in this country. Mm-hmm. You just heard Mr. Perry outline some of the things that he would like to do. What are your thoughts?
Definitely the immigration system is broken, and I think it depends on who you talk to about how we fix it. I think one of the things that's been most important in our immigration policy since we first started legislating it is family reunification. We have too many children who are in cages who haven't been able to see their families for months. That should never happen in America, and we need to make that a priority. And even though we've already won legal lawsuits that say that we have to reunify these families, it's not being done. So that definitely needs to be a priority. Secondarily, I think that we need to continue a path forward for citizenship for our DACA recipients. Our Dreamers have been here, and they've been valuable members of our society, and that they should be able to obtain citizenship. I think that's a very easy one and should be something that we can legislate. Probably the biggest point that I disagree with is the question of securing our border. I think when we look at the way that we currently have immigration status, that it's a broken system, and securing a border doesn't fix that. I even question whether or not your blue card system works in a world where we secure the borders and people can't come into this great country. I also think that we need to look at the way that people do legally immigrate into the United States. Recently, I was able to have a Facebook event where I spoke with a family that lives here in CD1 that was able to immigrate from Chile. And they spoke about the difficulties of how hard it was to do the paperwork, but also constantly wait for that response, and how it delayed their ability to access a PhD program here in Utah State. They had to delay that by a year. But then when we have immigrants from more of the European countries, that is a very expedited process. So the system is broken. It privileges certain types of immigrants. And I think that we need to make it a more fair system that allows everyone who wants to come to America the ability to do so. And that securing the border doesn't change that. It's a question of access, and that we need to have a fair system for all.
Mr. Perry, I want to come back to you because she raised questions about one of your priorities, securing the border, and she doesn't agree with you on that. What is your response?
If you can't control the amount of people that are coming into our country, if it's an open gate, you can't devise a program that's going to work for everyone. It just won't work. So I absolutely agree. We need to make it easier, and especially those that are on our southern borders, make it easier for them to come into our country that want to come legally and contribute. But absolutely, you need to stop the flow. You just do.
Ms. Cheek, would you like to respond to that? You have 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think there's a huge difference between securing the border and an open gate. I think that when we use rhetoric like securing the border, it is a dog whistle that is a call for we don't want certain type of immigrants into our country because it's a question of our southern border. And that's not the way that America was built. We need to have the ability for those who want to immigrate to the United States to be able to do so. And when we talk about securing the border, it's about keeping particular people out, and that's not how America should be.
Our next question, it is a one-minute response from each of the candidates. It comes to us via social media on the Utah Debate Commission website. And the question is this: defense spending is a major source of employment in northern Utah. Would you support cuts to defense spending to deal with the current massive federal deficit? And I think we begin this one with Jamie Cheek. You have 1 minute.
So I think defense spending is a big piece of the U.S. budget, but also a big piece here in northern Utah, especially with Hill Air Force Base in our backyard. I think that it's not a question of necessarily just cuts to defense spending, but it's finding areas where we can trim the fat that exists and then also re-modernizing the way that our military functions. We need to be looking at investing in our military, things like technology and ways that we can move the military forward, and less on the hard power that exists in our military. Of buying or building more submarines and fighter jets. We already outspend the next five biggest countries on defense spending. So, yes, we do need to make a change in the way that we do it. I don't think it's a slash and dash and that we move all these funds to solve other issues. I think that we need to continue to support the military families that exist here and the contracts that we have, especially in northern Utah. But there's a way that we can do it that moves the country forward, moves our military forward, and isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Mr. Perry, you have 1 minute.
I absolutely believe in having a strong country. I believe we have that now. I believe there's areas that we may be able to trim and cut a little bit, but I absolutely believe in making sure that we protect Hill Air Force Base at all costs. It not only provides the country with safety and security, but it also provides safety and security, economic security, to thousands that work in our district. And it would be a priority of mine to make sure at all costs that none of that spending is touched. We have a wonderful training ground on the west side of the lake, and fighter jets from all over the country come here. And making sure that we maintain that spending, making sure we're ready for anything that comes our way is a priority.
We have time for one more question before your closing comments. And this is a question I want to ask you. I'll give each of you 30 seconds to respond, and we'll begin with Mr. Perry. Should you win the primary and win the election in November, in 2 years, if you decide to run again, what will you tell voters in the first district that you worked on and achieved in that 2-year period of time? Mr. Perry, 30 seconds.
I would like to tell them that we've moved the needle on climate change, that we've moved the needle on how we treat the environment, that we have come up with an immigration policy that works. I believe it can be done. I believe there's people in Washington, D.C. that want it done. And so I would point to those as victories. I would point to how we can help people succeed, how we can give a voice to the marginalized.
Jamie Cheek, what's the one promise you'd make and achieve it in 2 years if you're elected?
I think that we're going to make progress on health care. I think this is the time, and people want to talk about it, and we need to see change. Everyone has someone who's been affected by a lapse in health care or been not able to seek the care that they need. And Congress wants to do something different. We need to move that step forward. And like I already said, I know it won't necessarily be Medicare for all, but we can definitely make it more accessible and more affordable for all Utahns. So I'm going to come home in 2022 and tell them the things that we were able to do and made health care affordable.
Final question for you. We can have a little fun with this. There is a new trend in this country now as we deal with the pandemic, and it's called mask shaming. If you wear a mask or not wear a mask in public, Ms. Cheek, do you wear a mask in public or not? And if so, why or why not?
Absolutely. My work, as I work for the state of Utah, we wear masks. And it's not just about me or you. I'm wearing a mask so that shows you that I love you, I care about you, I want to protect you, and that's why I wear one.
Mr. Perry, to mask or not to mask?
I absolutely wear a mask. And I wore a mask in Walmart in Logan the other day, and I was probably the only one in there other than the workers. It's important that we follow science.
All right. Thank you. Well, we have reached the end of our allotted time for the questions for the candidates, and we now move to one-minute closing statements. Prior to airtime, it was determined that Mr. Darren Perry would have the first one-minute opportunity, followed by Jamie Cheek. Mr. Perry, you have 1 minute for your closing remarks.
Imagine a generation of young Americans, black, white, brown, defined by hope and not despair. by love and not anger, by life and not endless funerals of loved ones. A generation that is defined by the idea that they are valuable, that they matter, that they have a future. That is the very generation that I see today. The problems facing America are not Republican problems. They're not Democrat problems. They're American problems. And it's going to take all of us working together to make a difference. I can't change the past. I don't want to change the past. But you and I can change the future. Some of the greatest crimes in the history of our country were not caused by hatred, but by indifference. It's time for good people to stand up and make a difference. And I would be honored to serve as your congressman in the 1st District.
Jamie Cheek, you have 1 minute for your closing remarks.
I promise you a fighting, grassroots Democratic campaign, a campaign that will offer the people of Utah's 1st Congressional District a clear alternative to Republicans' obstruction and that will restore the people's faith in politics. We must win for health care. We must provide humane, dignified, and affordable health care for all the people in our country. We must win for the working people. This past decade, working people have witnessed stagnant wages, increased prices, increased taxes, benefit cuts, broken dreams, broken lives, broken families. This has to stop. Here's what I can promise you as your congresswoman. I am passionate about protecting the most vulnerable among us. I believe in businesses that make productive investments in our communities and our economy. I support civil rights and human rights in our country and abroad. I'm opposed to discrimination against any group of people. I work with and continue to be inspired by people with disabilities. If you believe in what I fight for, then vote for me, Jamie Cheek, on June 30th. I'm a fighter for children, the disabled and disadvantaged, an environmentalist, and a mom. With your vote, I will fight to be your Democratic champion in Congress.
Candidates, thank you very much. We appreciate your time this afternoon. Again, we want to thank Jamie Cheek and Dave Perry this afternoon. It's been an informative hour. The commission thanks the University of Utah and PBS Utah for hosting and facilitating this debate. We also want to thank our wonderful, generous sponsors, the Larry H. and Gail Miller Family Foundation and doTERRA Essential Oils. Special appreciation goes to the Utah Debate Commission co-chairs Karen Hale, Wayne Niederhauser, and Executive Director Nina Sliding. And particularly thanks to the many broadcast stations who brought you this debate as a public service this afternoon. You've heard from the candidates. The Utah Debate Commission urges you to vote on June 30th. Please do so. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rod Arquette. Enjoy the rest of the afternoon.